If you're anything like me, and I know that I am, sometimes you want to rush to the next thing, and you don't have to raise your hand or anything, but that time might have been uncomfortable. And I want you to know, if you were feeling like a little tightness here, that meant you were supposed to say something, okay? You know who you are. But oftentimes we kind of relinquish movement in our bodies, and we kind of just bury it. I've done this enough to know that it's easily you can be easily entertained with the gospel, but not moved by it. And so when I speak, when I teach, when I train, I try to get people moving physically, because when you move physically, your mind stops thinking too much about yourself. And here's what I know. If you were uncomfortable, you're in a good place, because the greatest growth never came out of the greatest comfort. And I want you to think of the times that you've grown the most. I promise you, it probably wasn't when things are easy. It's probably times that Kat talked about where you hit rock bottom and you know things have to change, so you have to stop faking it. And so just know, if you're not used to being uncomfortable, if you want to grow, you have to intentionally put yourselves in positions where you have to be challenged. And courage is simply this. Courage is not the absence of fear. It's peace in the midst of it. So the idea isn't don't be afraid and you muster up this just power in yourself so you don't fear. It's no, you just have to have faith in something bigger than the thing that you fear. When you put faith in Jesus, then you don't have the anxiety that you had when you thought you were in control. But you have to understand, when you invite Jesus into the boat, which he's already there, when you are awakened to the fact that he's already in your life, the God of the universe is in your boat, you start to have a little bit more faith because you're not in control. But I know how it is. I was just watching the kids. They're hanging onto that rope like they're trapped, right? They're just like walking. The chain gang walked by, and everyone's like, oh, look how cute that is. And I'm thinking, at any point, if one of those children understood what freedom meant, they would let go. And I'm just imagining the chaos, what would happen if those kids just decided that freedom was like this, and all the KCs just running around. But I was just thinking, how much do we cling to things that we don't have to cling on to? And we're holding on to our past and our problems, and we just are walking life like this, and we're really clinging to something that we don't need to cling to. We just have to go like this and open our hands and give it to him. And he's saying that's the true mark of a follower of Jesus, is freedom. It's not strict obedience to rules. It is freedom. But guess what? Freedom will lead to obedience when you know that he loves you. So we have this twisted mentality of what it means to follow Jesus. I thought it used to mean going to church and following the rules and not doing certain things. Instead of giving my life and my followership to him and not my friends, and he would rearrange my life, we think it's the other way around. We think it's like this. My wife and I were just in Anaheim. We went to Disneyland. Now they have other ways of doing how tall kids are, but I remember, do you remember this? When this was like, how tall are you? Can you get on this ride? And I remember prior to the way they do things now, there was someone's job just to walk the line like this. And I just remember children fearing this. And I'm standing in line for the Indiana Jones ride. I can't do the spinny stuff. I can just do like ones that are exciting. And there was a kid in front of us, and he was right on the cusp. And the guy passed by a couple times, and he'd do one of these. He'd stand up on his toes. And then he stops, and the kid is like, no. And he puts the stick next to him. He shoves his little head down. Then he tapped him on his heels. He's like, can't ride this ride. You're too short. And he gets kicked out of line, and I just remember thinking, oh, man, you're going to miss it. This is going to be awesome next time. No, I didn't do that. I just felt bad for him because I knew what I was about to go on. This was this adventure. And somehow, some way, we've put this outside of the church. We've said, hey, here's a spiritual height requirement. And we say, hey, when you get old enough, you'll understand these things. Or when I get married and have kids, then I'll take Jesus seriously. We have this idea that once I stop doing these certain things, and if I make enough money, then I can start trusting you. And then we have this idea that this exists. But Jesus came in such a way that says, what are you talking about? You don't have to have it all together. You don't have to have it all together because I'm coming to you in your brokenness, in your mess. And if I could give you a message from last night, it was this. We wish you a messy Christmas. Because when you look at the Christmas story, the reason why I wanted to bring that up was he didn't come with the power in which he had. He came and he was born in an unventilated cave and placed in a feeding trough. He appeared to shepherds, and as shepherds at the time, they were lowly people. Their word had no place in court. No one trusted them. They were seen as outsiders. They had no status. But yet, they had a front row seat to the Messiah. And then the Magi, who were Gentiles. And if we unpack that story, if you read that story again, it says, when they came to the house, Jesus was a child. Which means it was likely Jesus was 3 years old, that these wise men saw a star. They were astrologists that looked at the stars for significance, and they followed this star for 3 years. Imagine the waiting that they had to go through, the anticipation that they had, and when they saw the star, they realized they weren't searching for a star. They were looking for a person. And it was Jesus. And Jesus changed their life. For me, my Christmas star was friends. I was looking for friendship. And that star led me to a Subway sub shop in downtown Los Angeles where I met Jesus. And that changed my life. I've talked to a few of you. I said, how long have you been coming? They say, how long have you been coming? And I go, well, how'd you start coming? Well, I got invited. And really, I just wanted a vacation. And I wanted to come to Grandview Lodge, and it's cheaper. And they got these programs for the kids, and you weren't coming for Jesus. You weren't even coming for community. You were coming for a break, let's be honest. But I trust, because I know the God that I serve, he used whatever he needed to use to get you here, for you to hear something that you didn't expect, but that your soul was craving. And so I don't want to just rush to the next message without reflecting and asking you to pause and say, Lord, what do you have for me? Not us. What do you have for me? Because I'm not here to entertain you. I'm here to place you right outside the manger so you can say, this is what I really need because this is going to change my life. It's not family fest. That's what God used to get you to the foot of the cross. But what is it that you need to hear? Because when you understand that the God of the universe came in such a way that opened the door for everybody, that's why he came in the mess. Because if Jesus was born on a hill in a castle, people would think, I need to get myself to that place. But when he came to be born in a manger, he said, everybody is invited. I work out at Lifetime Fitness in Edina. It's kind of bougie, I can say that. But what I love about it is the general manager, his name is Sean, he cleans up all the time. I've seen him at 5 a.m, and he's walking through the parking lot picking up trash. When he's doing his workout, he has a vacuum cleaner with him. In between sets, he's running the corner, getting the dust. He's got a rag. He's wiping his sweat off, and then he starts polishing off the weights. I'm like, what are you doing? But it creates this culture that everybody thinks it's important for them to do those things. No job is too below them. And take that and multiply it by infinity, because that's what Jesus did when he came in the mess. And he said, I want to make sure that the God of the universe, I want to come in such a way that's not like Taylor Swift, where wherever I go, I bring profit. God is saying, I'm coming in such a way that people know that when I'm here, I'm for everybody. And so I'm humbled when I get to be part of these things. And like I said, I was humbled when Kirk Cousins got on the airplane, and I was like, oh, wondering, when can I get to first class? That I'm like praying, Lord, get me into first class. And then someone who can buy their own private jet walks on the airplane, and he goes to no class with me, and I'm like, he's like one of us. Jesus came to say, hey, he's like one of us. We have access to him. And like I said, it was a Monday night when I ran into him on the airplane, and they were playing the Chicago Bears that night. So I just remember thinking, man, not only is Kirk Cousins on this airplane, he would much rather be somewhere else on the field. And I remember watching the series Quarterback. I don't know if you've seen it. But he said this quote after they lost the playoff game last year. He goes, this is probably the toughest loss in my career, so this hurts. He had voiced he wanted to be a Viking and stay a Viking. But then I imagine him on an airplane with me and coach was probably worse than that moment. Because he knew the schedule. He would be rather playing a Monday night football game against the Bears, but yet he is with the rest of the people in the back of an airplane. And he had his Achilles boot on. And I got a chance to talk with him at the, we're going up this long escalator in Atlanta Airport. I don't know if you've ever been there. I'm standing next to him like, okay, now I got to talk to him. And I'm wondering, like, is he going to be traded to Atlanta? So I'm trying to pry. I'm like, so what brings you to Atlanta? And he goes, are you a Vikings fan? I'm like, I want to know more about you. But he kept asking me questions. He's like, where do you live? I go, Richfield. He goes, that's a great place. We get to the top, and he goes, yeah, you got to go and cheer those Vikings on. And then he limped away with his boot. And I'm like, man, he's waiting in the mess. And he's looking for the light. This is someone that understands that even in the mess, if you don't know this, he's a follower of Christ. Like in the mess, he knows who his Messiah is. He knows that God is with him, Emmanuel. He knows that he is the chief shepherd. He knows who he belongs to. But also in this, when we understand the Christmas story, we understand that the light is the way that Jesus came. That Jesus came with love. We heard that this morning. John 3:16, for God so loved the world. That's why he came. And he came with intention. He came to this earth and he intentionally went into a manger to make space for everyone else. He came with grace, hope, and truth. So when you wait in the mess, you should find Jesus there. And when you look for the light, you should find Jesus there. And that's how when you are in the worst part of your career, like Kirk Cousins is currently, without knowing his future, he says this, I'm excited to kind of write the next chapter and see what God wants to do with it, whatever it may be. Just listen to his obedience in the mess of his life, looking for the light. And just kind of be reminded again that, you know, I've kind of got my career. It's not my career. You know, it's kind of his career that I steward. And I just got to surrender myself and let him lead where he wants to go. When that's a torn Achilles, I have to accept it just as much as if it's a win on a Monday night football game. You know, it goes both ways. If I'm just a steward of what he gives me, then when he gives me a torn Achilles, I got to steward that. If you can think of someone that is waiting in the mess and looking for the light, it is Kirk Cousins. Now, it's just been interesting because the quarterback debate, what are we going to do? And I just remember running into another quarterback at the Mall of America. And I was at the mall, and there's a huge line for to go into this mini golf place. And I'm thinking, that place is lame. Why are people waiting there? And so I was like so confused because there's this giant line. I've never seen a line there. And I realized who was in line or who was in there and everyone was waiting for. And then I hear this crowd erupt. And I saw the direction where they were walking, and I've been to the mall a ton of times. So I'm like, I'm going to cut through the food court, and I'm going to get ahead of this crowd, and I'm just going to film it. So let's roll that clip. It kept going. It was probably like 2 minutes long. So if you didn't see who that was, I was walking through. Let's go to the next slide. It was Aaron Rodgers. So the Green Bay Packers were playing the Vikings the next day. And Aaron Rodgers, when I ran to the front and I pulled my phone out, he just looks at me and goes, he starts shaking his head. And he was playing for the Packers at the time. They played the next day. And when I re-watched the clip, I saw this. You see that lady next to him? This whole crowd is walking with him through the mall. Everyone's excited. They got their Packer jerseys on. And this woman takes a selfie, and he, like, looks away. And I would just imagine what this woman was saying, like, when she sent it to her friends. Look at me and Aaron Rodgers. We're hanging out at the Mall of America. And it was funny, but it was kind of sad to think, like, does he really know him? Does he know her? Absolutely not. And I realize it is quite possible that you can be following Jesus and have no idea who he is. You can be walking and following this crowd that's following Jesus and really have no idea who he is, and you have no connection to him, but you can be so proud and taking selfies at Family Fest. Look at me and Jesus loving people. And you can go on mission trips and taking selfies with Jesus. And really, when it comes down to it, do you really know him or not? Because it's easy to take a selfie, but it's hard to surrender to someone, right? I don't want people just to take selfies with Jesus. I want people to actually surrender. And so you got to figure out where you are in your journey of faith and be okay there, because he's going to meet you there. You don't have to do anything other than be, because he's coming for you. And he's coming to be with you in the mess, because he's in it. And so there's nothing you have to do but just awaken to it. And there's a story that's been so central to my faith that I just visit it often. And it's the story, it comes after Jesus calms the storm. Jesus calms the storm, and then he goes over and heals a demon-possessed man. And then he comes back across the sea, and we'll pick up this story here. It says, when Jesus had again crossed over by boat to the other side, a large crowd gathered around him while he was by the lake. Then one of the synagogue leaders named Jairus came. I feel his pain. No one can pronounce his name. I've heard this several times. Jairus. It doesn't matter. Jairus. But here's one thing I want you to know. If your name is in the Bible, you're important. So he wasn't some random man. It says Jairus. He was a synagogue leader. He didn't just know religious things. He led these things. So Jairus came, and when he saw Jesus, he fell at his feet. He lost his dignity. A dignified man would not do this in front of a carpenter. So there's a situation going on, this powerful, privileged man's life, this religious man's life, in which he falls at the feet of Jesus. This would have been shameful for everyone that saw this. He pleaded earnestly with him, "My little daughter is dying. Please come and put your hands on her so that she will be healed and live." Just picture this. Jesus gets off the boat, all the disciples are around him, this large crowd. The Gospel of Luke said this crowd nearly crushed him. But here we are, Jairus, this powerful, privileged person, is on his knees. Jesus didn't respond this way. "Aren't you the religious leader? Shouldn't you go pray about it? Are your prayers not strong enough? What does your tradition say?" Because when you come to Jesus in desperation, he's not going to question you. He's going to go with you. He's going to say, "I'm in the mess with you." So simply, verse 24, it says this. Jesus' response was that he went with him. Emmanuel, God with us. It says, a large crowd followed and pressed around him. The crowd was gathering because they saw Jairus, they saw Jesus, and they were wondering what was going on. And a woman was there who had been subject to bleeding for 12 years. She had suffered a great deal under the care of many doctors and had spent all she had, yet instead of getting better, she grew worse. Now you have Jairus, powerful, recognized, respected. And then you have, what's her name? Woman. Unimportant, but not just a woman. She was sick. She was an outcast. She was unclean. And people that were subject to bleeding for 12 years, they had to live in a colony by themselves, apart from society. So imagine you have this condition for 12 years, and people know you as the woman who is sick. Just think about the identity that she told herself year after year for 12 years. It said she went to all the doctors, but they took advantage of her money. Instead of getting better, she grew worse. She's hopeless. She's at rock bottom. So you have someone here with status and someone here with shame. And verse 27, when she heard about Jesus, she didn't know much about, she just heard. When she heard about Jesus, she came up behind him in the crowd and touched his cloak because she thought, if I just touch his clothes, I'll be healed. She's tried everything, gotten worse. She's in shame. She's rock bottom. But she heard that there was a guy so holy that he was healing people. She knew that she was breaking all types of laws if she walked in society and brushed up against normal people. But instead, she was courageous and she moved. She just didn't think about it and pray about it. She moved. She got up out of her place and she walked through the crowd. She crawled through the crowd. She hid through the crowd. And she thought, if he's just so holy, I don't even need to talk to him. I don't need him to lay his hands on me. If I just touch his cloak, he's so holy. If I'm sick and someone bumps into me and they get sick, maybe if I touch his cloak, that's all I need and I'll be healed. She's expectant. She's in the mess just like the three wise men, just like the magi, that she's expectant, then her life could change. It says this, immediately her bleeding stopped, and she felt in her body that she was freed from her suffering. Just imagine this, and we didn't coordinate this, that when she shared her story of suffering, I knew what I was going to talk about, and I got excited. I'm like, God, what are you going to say now? Because we didn't stack these stories, but she said immediately it just changed. This new medication just changed. Imagine how much this woman has been hurting, and she touches this cloak, and she feels in her body that she's free from her suffering. Just like that, from shame to hope. The story doesn't stop there, though. It says this, at once, Jesus realized that power had gone out from him. He turned around in the crowd and he asked, who touched my clothes? You see the people crowding against you, his disciples answered, and yet you can ask who touched me? But Jesus kept looking around to see who had done it. It said the crowd was pressing around him. Just picture how ridiculous this is. Jesus is walking through the crowd, but he was being followed by all the people, like Aaron Rodgers was being followed. But he stops and he said, there's someone that is actually in need of me. There is someone that's actually desperate for me. They're not just following to follow to see what happens. Someone in this crowd touched me because they're in desperate need of my power. And as he felt his cloak and his power go out and heal someone, he's like, no, I need to stop. And again, this is after Jesus calmed the sea. And after Jesus healed the demon-possessed man and threw the demons into a herd of pigs that went off a cliff. Now, you're the disciples. You've seen those things happen. And Jesus now stops. He's like, who touched my clothes? They're like, you can do all those things, but you don't know this? Like, I've seen miracles, but you don't know who touched your cloak? Are you serious? But Jesus is saying, no, I am not moving. So now, big picture of the story. Jairus, on his way to healing his dying daughter. What kind of things do you think he was thinking? Just think like, okay, now you're going to stop to ask who touched your clothes. What's something you as Jairus would be asking right now or feeling? Vocalize it. What's one thing? What about me? What else? Frustrated? Because you're not doing what I asked you to do first, and now you're asking who touched my clothes. Do you ever get frustrated with God? Do you ever get wondering, like, hey, did you not know my needs when I prayed them? That they were kind of urgent, Jesus? And Jesus is saying, well, who touched my jacket? Just imagine that brewing, but the story continues. Then the woman, knowing what had happened to her, she just finally had hope, but now she pictures her life ending because she broke all the rules to get it. She fell at his feet, trembling with fear, told him the whole truth. She had a moment of rest, now she's thinking, my life is over. I finally got free, and now I'm going to be punished for my sins. And she's telling the whole truth. Do you think that took a little bit of time? And Jairus is getting more frustrated, and the woman is weeping, telling her story, saying, I've gone to all these doctors, I've been abused, but I just heard about you, Jesus, and I didn't want to talk to you, I didn't want to bother you, I knew you were driving, or walking, he wasn't driving, I knew you were going to Jairus' house quickly, so I didn't want to interrupt, but I just had this idea that maybe if I touched your cloak, I'd be healed. And in the moment that she's finally felt free, now she's in fear, Jesus' response was simply this. He said to her, daughter, with one word, he brought her back. It's a family word. He didn't say woman. He didn't say sick lady. With one word, he just said, daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace and be freed from your suffering. Now, if Jesus didn't stop, she would have said, that was a really nice cloak, because she knew she was healed. She would have walked away and she was like, man, I need to get a cloak like that, because I touched the cloak and it was healed. The reason why Jesus stopped, because he wanted to make sure that she knew that her faith in him, not the cloak, was what saved her. He stopped because not only did he want to heal her body, because that had already happened, he wanted to heal her soul. He wanted to say, your identity's not wrapped up in your past. Your identity is wrapped up in this one word, daughter. You belong to me. He rewrote her entire story with one word saying, daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace and be freed from your suffering. I just want everyone on earth to know that that's our true identity, is not the jobs that we have, but the Father telling us, son, daughter, you belong to me first and foremost. Seek me first. But the story doesn't end there. So you're imagining Jairus over here thinking, why are you speaking to this woman? I've seen her before, and she's supposed to stay on that. Why are you, Jesus, talking to her? And Jesus didn't have to say it, but he was like, don't you remember when I showed up for the shepherds? Don't you remember when I was born in a manger? He's saying, I'm not just for you, Jairus. I'm for all people, but I will continue to walk with you. And says, while Jesus was still speaking, some people came from the house of Jairus, the synagogue leader. Your daughter is dead, they said. Why bother the teacher anymore? Because it's all about transactions, isn't it? You didn't get what you want, so don't bother with Jesus anymore. Sometimes people quit their faith because they think that Jesus is like that. Overhearing what they said, Jesus told him, do not be afraid, just believe. He did not let anyone follow him except Peter, James, and John, the brother of James. And when they came to the house of the synagogue leader, Jesus saw a commotion with people crying and wailing loudly. He went in and said to him, why all this commotion and wailing? The child is not dead, but asleep. They laughed at him because they were professional mourners. They've seen dead bodies before. And so when Jesus came in, he came in with a different kind of news. She's not dead, she's asleep. But I'll tell you this, Jesus looks at situations differently than we do. When other doctors would have said, hey, you should give up. You should just take more medication. You should do these things. Kat was seeking a faith, saying, no, there's got to be something else. And he speaks to us individually. He's not speaking to the crowd at this point. He's saying, just believe. And they walk in, and all the people that had one idea of like, no, this is how it is, Jesus looks at your life and says, no, this is different. After he put them all out, he took the child's father, mother, and the disciples who were with him and went in where the child was. He took her by the hand and said to her, Talitha kum, which means little girl, I say to you, get up. It was this gentle awakening. It's not like he walked in there with all the power of the God that created the universe with a breath. He didn't go, watch this. And then she just jumped up. Like, he's a gentle, powerful God that says, little girl, I say to you, arise. Immediately the girl stood up and began to walk around. She was 12 years old. She was alive as long as the woman was suffering. At this, they were completely astonished. And he gave strict orders not to let anyone know about this, and he told them to give her something to eat. What I love about this story is that the power that God has isn't on display for the masses in this case. He's saying, I'm changing lives one person at a time. I have the time to do that because guess what? I created time. So be patient. So the God of the universe steps in, and he's for the Jairuses, the powerful, the privileged, the people with status. But he's also for the people that have shame, brokenness, heartache, and hopelessness. And he's walking with people that are desperate for him. And he's with people that are searching desperately through the crowd, hiding to find him. And he's also for the people that are just asleep. Because that was me. I was more like the little girl. I was sleeping. And Jesus reached into my life in that Subway sub shop and he said, young man, son, arise. Let your life be changed. And I went from being that kid that got caught drinking to a son of the Most High God. Now, I don't know what your identity needs to shift from, but when you understand that your identity first and foremost is a beloved child of the Most High, that should shape everything you do. Like I said, if we don't do it that way, we become what we do. And this whole story, I've been preaching on this story for years, but it hit a whole lot different when I had this girl, my daughter Kalia, my firstborn. And I remember my first Father's Day. It didn't start like this. My first Father's Day was a mess. And my wife, she worked at a high-end seafood restaurant. And she had to work that day. It's Father's Day, so she has to work a lot of holidays. So she hands Kalia to me. She's 6 months old, and she says, hey, you need to go to urgent care because she's not feeling well. I got to go to work. I'm like, okay, I got this. So I go to urgent care. I hand my child over. The doctors are like looking at her, putting the flashlight. I'm freaking out. And then they leave the room. They do some testing, and they come back, and I'm just a brand new dad. And I'm sitting there. They said, okay, everything is checking out. You need to do two things. I'm like, okay, I'm a dad. I can count to two. What are they? Make sure she's being fed and make sure she's filling her diaper. I'm like, I can remember those things. So we go and I feed her. We go home. We're sitting on the couch. I'm not doing too much. We're watching basketball and I begin to hear her diaper filling to abundance, which means it's overflowing. And I'm sitting on the couch and I'm like, oh no. And I don't want to drip anywhere else. So I'm carrying her like this, walking over to the changing station. And then I remember what the doctor said, if she's filling her diaper, that she's healthy. And I lifted her up and go like, you're working. And I remember setting her down on the station. I'm cleaning her. I'm just like smiling. I was just like joyfully cleaning her up because I knew that when her mess was on me, then my joy was on her. And I'm like, this is what you're supposed to do. And God gave me a glimpse and a message. He said, that's what the cross was. Your mess on me on the cross. Your sin, your shame, everything was on me, but my joy was on you, cleaning you up, giving you a new identity because I love you. That's really the message. That is the gospel. It's not about what we do. It's about who we are. But when we understand who we are, then we can actually live the lives that we're created to live. So I'm going to end a little differently before we go off into small groups. I'm going to play a song that is really about your identity. And when I cue that, you can start playing the video. But what I want you to do in that time, we have post-it notes and markers over there, and post-it notes and markers over here. And I just want you to think about the identity that you've had, or convince yourself, the story that you've been saying. And as the song plays, as you feel led, told you, I set it up earlier, I'm going to ask you, just be moved, that you grab this and think about what's a story or something you've told yourself in the mirror. And one I'm going to write down is, I don't belong. And as the song plays and you feel led, I want you to take that identity and walk over here where we have this mirror And when you have the courage to do that, just to place it there. And then just take a moment to realize that that's not who you are, but this is who you are. You are a beloved child of God. Because my hope is that people aren't here to be entertained. They're here to be changed. And sometimes we take our identity and think it's ours to hold, like that rope, but it's really holding us hostage. And so when we can name those things, we can actually release the rope and say, this is what real freedom looks like and feels like. So after this song, I'll pray, but let's play this video. And as you feel led, there's stations over there and over here. And we'll go from there. So just play this. If you're over there, just take your time filling those things out, and we're going to leave that up during small group. But let me pray and close our time here. Heavenly Father, I just thank you for you being you. I pray that you give us the courage that it took the woman to cut through the crowd, just to chase down a new identity. Lord, give us eyes to see how much you love us. Give us hands that are open to receive the gift that you are extending to us. We thank you, we praise you, we lift you up. In Jesus' name, amen.